No, there's two. There's last week one, and this week and one new one. Let's keep one for myself. I got one for myself. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're continuing the series on relationships in halacha, and in particular, the mitzvah of kibud av va'em, and we're coming to a critical juncture, a topic we began discussing last week, whether an individual is required to obey a parent who tells him or her that you are not permitted to marry this man or woman. So there. Get on my high horse as your father or mother. You are not to marry this individual. What's the scoop? So and the short answer in the Ramah is that you're not required to listen. That's the short answer. And the source is a Tshuvas Maharik, Rav Yosef Kolon, one of the great giants of halacha. But the question, of course, becomes why, and therefore, what are the details which relate to it? So we mentioned last week that the Nitziv, the famous Nitziv, says that if there is a woman, we'll start in that direction, who is the woman is, quote, Eina Hogeneslo, is not appropriate for him, and it causes what we call a, quote, Bizoyon, an embarrassment to the father, then the Nitziv claims that the man, in fact, may not marry her. He must obey what his father says. However, the Shevet Halevi, Rav Vosner, who is one of the great contemporary scholars, whose works are to be found right over here, Shevet Halevi, 10 volumes, he's a Rav in B'nai Barak, he seems to say the opposite. And what's his source? So here's, if those who want to just look a little bit inside, in the 192, that's the holdover from last week, on the very top, he says that the Maharik is referring to a very sordid and unholy case. A very, very sad case. Rumors are being whispered that this son of his, this big tzaddik son that he wants to make sure doesn't marry a woman not unworthy of him, this big tzaddik son, there were rumors going around that he had been involved in what was an adulterous relationship with this woman while she was still married to a previous husband. Oh my goodness. Very bad news. Bad news. Bad news. So therefore, on this basis, the Shevet Halevi says the only time that the Maharik, he's the original source. The Nitziv says that if it's a bizoyon to the father, it's an embarrassment to the father, then the child must obey the father and not marry her. And some are trying to derive this from the word of the Maharik, Eina Hogenes Lo. That this woman is not fit for him. And the Shevet Halevi says, no, Eina Hogenes Lo is referring to a very sordid case where there are witnesses that saw something between him and between her. But other than that, every woman is considered to be appropriate. Hogenes. Yes.
Why would you have to come on to kibud av? You're not allowed to live with a person.
Exactly. You're completely correct.
She got divorced.
Even if she got divorced, the Eddie is correct. If there's a suspicion of adultery, then she's not permitted to marry this boyfriend of hers. There weren't quite witnesses. The witnesses will see some circumstantial evidence. A bit of a complicated case. It seems to me, as I mentioned this a little bit at Shalosh Shudis, that the most important word in this entire phrase is the word lo. Who is this woman appropriate for him? Now, there are many men, I use men especially, who would see nothing wrong with their children. My child is God's gift to humanity. And this woman is unworthy of my son. Do you know who my son is? My son is... My son. He's my son. So this woman is not worthy of my son. But the truth is, this case, which involves two people, neither one is a big tzaddik over here. So So the truth is, it's a perfect match. He's no tzaddik, she's no tzaddikus, and that's, it's a perfect match. It's a perfect match. So therefore, in that kind of a case, the father has nothing to say. You'll say the father's embarrassed by the whole thing. Sure, he's embarrassed. He has every reason to be embarrassed, but his embarrassment is not his girl's fault, it's his own son's fault. His son is no big tzaddik. So, in other words, if a father says that my son, who is really is a very special young man, is being blinded by a young woman's beauty or charm or who knows what, and therefore he's marrying something he really shouldn't be marrying, then perhaps is what to talk about. That if the son is doing something which is embarrassing the father, then we should follow the nitziv and say he has to obey the father. But in this particular case, they deserve each other. So this is something which is very, very problematic. People can have very blind spots with respect to their own children. They cannot see any fault in their own children. And we have to be honest when we evaluate our own children. If we're not honest about our own children, how can we then give them advice about marriage? It's absurd. It's absurd. If you don't know your own child, if you're not willing to admit that your child has something wrong here and there, then how can you give them good advice about marriage? It just doesn't make any sense. This is exactly what's happening in this particular case. So therefore, it seems to me that the nitziv is correct, that a child, in fact, must obey a parent in a case when the child, when the marriage is inappropriate. Well, I'm going to repeat what I said before. But who is the judge? Who is the judge? The son will tell his father, "Dad, you're wrong. This isn't it is a very appropriate match." And the dad will say, "Sonny, you're wrong." So whenever we come to these questions, who decides at the end of the day? Any halachic question, who decides? The rabbi. But as I said last time, who's rabbi? Who's rabbi? So the father can go to his rabbi that he gave him a $1 million donation to the yeshiva last year and say, "Rabbi, is this shidduch appropriate? Don't you think this shidduch is not appropriate for my son?" I said, "Yeah, Mr. Cohen, this is not appropriate. I don't know." Pick a different name. Mr. Schwartz, okay? Yes, of course, it's not appropriate. But the son will say, "I'm not listening to you, to your rabbi. I'm going to my rabbi." Now, the son has no money to pay the rabbi, but he's assuming an honest rabbi who knows the young man. And if the son's rabbi says, "There's a perfectly appropriate shidduch, because where you are in life and where she is in life, it's very good," he's allowed to marry her, and that's all. So that's what I suggest as the normative halacha. It's interesting. There's a saying called the Tzitz Eliezer. Ever hear him? When we learned medical matters, we quoted him every week. Rabbi Waldenberg, Zichron Leroch, who passed away, I think just 2 years ago, at a very ripe old age. As a matter of fact, I saw a beautiful tribute by Rabbi Jachter in the Kol Torah that is passed around here on a weekly basis. Beautiful, beautiful tribute to Rabbi Waldenberg. Really big tzaddik. So he has a tshuva. It's in the 15th volume. It's also here. Tzitz Eliezer. Volume 15. Where he suggests as follows. What do you mean? The Nitziv says that the son has to listen because he's causing his father bizoyin, embarrassment. Huh. Since when do we follow embarrassment? The only time it's an embarrassment is if Chazal say it's an embarrassment. Not because the father says it's an embarrassment. What's an example of a Chazal say is an embarrassment? He gives a few choice examples. She's not conducting herself properly, etc., 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 etc. Okay, so what that really means is, it seems to me, that the father has an unrealistic expectation. He's expecting his son, because he's my son, to be able to marry the, you name it, okay, from the best family or from the best students in Beis Yaakov. I don't know what crazy thing he has in his mind. But in most situations, he's not being real. He's not being real. The child is the child is the child. And the child's probably, in most cases, making a proper choice. A proper choice. Now, it's interesting. There is in the new sheet that we got today, there is a remarkable expression, which I want to begin with. Let's see if I can find my version. In the English part, the left column. We'll start from the top. Eliezer, son of Masya, says, I'm just reading the English, the Hebrew is interspersed. If my father says, "Give me a drink of water," and at the same time, there's a mitzvah to do, I leave the mitzvah of honoring my father and do the other mitzvah. Why? The reason for this is that both I and my father are obligated in the performance of mitzvahs. Interesting. So wait a minute. So the Netziv says there is the mitzvah of getting married is also a mitzvah. So if I want to marry this woman and my father says no, I'll pull out this Gemara. Dad, gotta listen to me, because you're also obligated in the midst of getting married. We're all obligated. We have to listen to God. God said to get married. So I'm not going to listen to you, Dad. I listen to my Father in heaven. So the question is as follows. Despite that fact, this is an interesting, remarkable thing that Netziv says. We'll come back to other ways to get out of this. But this is only as far as the mitzvah of kibud av va'em. Okay? You are not going to give honor to your father and mother, and rather you're going to give honor to God. Listen to this. But this is a source we haven't gotten to in all of our, almost a month of shiurim. Aside from the mitzvah of kaved es avicha ves imecha, which is found, as we know, in Aseret HaDibros, in Parshas Yisro, and in the mitzvah of ish imo v'aviv tiro, which means to revere a father and mother, which we spoke about at great length, whether it means obedience or not, is a third place where father and mother is found. Who knows where that is? About Kari, I'm sure knows where it is. It's in Parshas Kisavo, a very unusual place, but we wouldn't expect to find it, where it says, Oror makle aviv imo. Not mekalel aviv imo, if you curse your father and mother. Not makle, if you hit your father and mother. That's capital offense. Either of those is capital offense. What does the word makle mean? What's the word makle? Not mekalel. Makle. What's the shorish of makle? Kal. You make light of your father and mother. You degrade your father and mother. Such a person, chalil, is considered to be cursed. It says the Netziv, if you cause embarrassment to your father and mother, you are degrading them. And he says like this, if you degrade your father and mother, it's such a serious offense, and he says, you know what? Although the Talmud teaches us that a father has the ability to forgive kibud av v'aim. The son is supposed to bring the father his tea, and supposed to help him out with his coat. We thought, son, I forgive you for it. I'd rather you don't do it because I'd rather be independent and I don't even want you to do it. The father can make such a statement and forgive the son for this. But if the son does something which is degrading of the father does not have the ability to, quote, forgive that. Because it's not just that you're not giving a father the reverence and the honor that the father or the mother deserves, but rather you're causing them a degradation, and causing a degradation is something which simply cannot be done, and a father cannot even, quote, forgive it. So it appear. However, it seems to me once again. Yes, I'm sorry.
Would you take that as far as, you know, making a joke that's not meant to be to degrade a parent, but it's, you know, it being a joke
at his expense.
At his expense, which, you know,
I would say he shouldn't do it. Not right to do. It's not right to do.
Can't do this to anybody.
Yeah, true, but certainly to a father. Now, however, listen to me very carefully. According to the opinion which we liked last week, which we called the Chazon Ish, which means, just to repeat again, that a father is obligated to his words, to be mevatel his ratzon, to set aside his own wishes, because he has no right to demand this of a child. So in that situation, when the father makes this unreasonable demand, the son has no responsibility or no obligation to obey this demand. And you'll say he's degrading and embarrassing the father? No. The father is degrading and embarrassing himself by making an unreasonable expectation of... Just imagine, I gave the example last week. The father's on, Sonny boy, I'm going to spend your whole day walking around the block. I live in this block, and I feel good that my son is always walking around the block with his cell phone. Every second, he's ready to come in and get me my tea and my newspaper. I'm a sugar nut. That's cracked. He's crazy. So if the son does not want to obey the father, there's no responsibility made that the father's making an absurd request. So most of these cases of Shaduchim, the father is making an unreasonable request. the son, dad, you got married, you married mom. I'll marry who I want to marry. Yeah?
Let's say in a society like in Brooklyn or something where it's customary for the parents to make shit up. Okay? And the son says, I don't want to participate in that
system.
I want to go and find, right, I want to find my own, you know, like at a party or something.
So he will have to find his own rav who will paskin for him. He's not required to follow the system of his Hasidic parents. I mean, he may come to me, and he may find some sympathy, and may I don't want to come and address, but it may, but he may find some sympathy here. And then if I tell him that, you know, it's a system which works well for those who are plugged into that system, I'm not against that system. But if you're plugged out of that system, you opted out in 10 other ways from the Hasidic mainstream.
But you're certainly embarrassing your parents to a certain extent. I mean, because their children are not following. You
know. Okay, but it's not the. Here's my point. It's not the marriage that's embarrassing them. He already opted out of the system 5 years ago. And that's where they lost him. Now, once he's opted out for the last 5 years, he's now when he went to university, which they can't stomach, you know. And he has a degree, and maybe he's a well, all kinds of other modern trappings. He's not going with long payers, so maybe he doesn't even have a beard, and which they So that's who he is right now. So I can tell the fellow, listen, if you want to go back to your Hasidic ways of your ancestors, be have my blessing. But as we say, Basher Husham, the way you are right now, for your father to expect you, the son when it comes to the Shidduch, to go, you know, back to the regular system and put on your strimal at the wedding, you're not doing that. That's not you. You have no response. If you want to do it, be my guest. But if you don't want to do it, you have, in my view, who you are now, you are entitled to follow the lifestyle you've been following for 5 years. It's not a ridiculous lifestyle. It's just a non-Hasidic lifestyle. Where if you meet at a party, or you meet with a more modern shatran where they go out for 3 months and not for 3 days. Just to be realistic, so that's a whole different story. A whole different story. Speaking of the going out, I can't resist but telling you this famous quip. We were discussing it after on the way up to Marav today, which is this week's parsha. Rav Moshe Bick, who are that name, Rav Moshe Bick? Oh, that came from the Bronx, so I certainly knew Rav Moshe Bick. Later lived in Borough Park, originally lived in the Bronx. So he wrote an article 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago, closer to 40 years ago, in what they used to call then the Morgan Journal. Then it became the Allgemeine when it became, whatever. It was a daily or weekly paper, in which he said, I've seen too much. I request that from now on, every young couple should go out at least 8 times before becoming engaged. Now, and some of us were smiling because 8 times is nothing. But in Borough Park and in Brooklyn, that's like it was a heresy. So the Satmar Rebbe was still alive. As I know, it had been over 30 years ago. The famous, the Rabbi Yerlish, it was like this. There was no one sharper than him to answer like this. When he heard the Rav Moshe Bick printed it in his Yiddish paper, the Satmar Rebbe quoted a pasuk in this week's parsha. You have to catch it. I'll first say it in its original, then I'll translate for those who. It says in the Torah that Rivka says, "Katzti b'chayai mipnei benos ches." Ches is the name of one of the seven nations in Canaan, but ches is also eight in the eighth letter. So what the Rebbe was saying was, I can't stand what this Rabbi Bick is saying, that they have to be benos ches, that they go out 8 times. But the Rabbi Moshe Bick had the last word on this one. They told him, the Rebbe said, he said like this, the Satmar Rebbe is a big Masada Kiddushin. Every day he does 4 weddings, he goes around him. But I, said Rabbi Moshe Bick, I'm a Masada Gittin. So I know that I'm right. This is a story which goes back 35, 40 years. So I just couldn't help but tell you. So just imagine that this boy wants to go out. He's a more modern fellow. He wants to go out 8 times. And his satmar said, well, you're crazy. You're a bum. You're a this. You're that. So you go to Rav Moshe Bick. Rav Moshe Bick said, yeah, it's a good idea to go out 8 times. Okay. You can multiply that any way you want it. 8 weeks, 8 this. But you have to go to the rabbi you're comfortable with. And you're no longer answerable to the old rabbi that you maybe had when you were till you were bar mitzvah. Because you're not the same person. And you're not the person your father wants you to be. But it's not the shidduch which is the problem. The shidduch is just as always, a shidduch is a manifestation of who you are. That's what it is. So if you're not the person your father wants you to be for the last 5 years, he can suddenly say, okay, but now you can't marry her. Sorry, you're a little too late. Should have tried 5 years ago to convince me about the other things. You didn't succeed there. Now I'm no longer obligated to do what you would have loved me to do in a different world. Adkan.
How many get now? You missed out that they went out 50 times, 30 times,
I'm not here to...
Just as many as the others, no?
I'm not commenting. I'm telling you the story. You go in the archives, I'm much a big printed it. That's exactly... Okay. Anyway, let's go further. There are two other reasons why the Ma'arik said you have to... You don't have to obey your father and mother. One of them is as follows. Let's say the father says to the son, I need you to honor me, right? Kibud av aim, and kibud av aim means, you know, I have to give me food. Please go to Prime Grill every night and buy me dinner. Is that the expensive one?
Yeah.
So what does it cost? And I want roast beef.
Is it kosher?
I assume so. Yeah. Roast beef with... I don't know, maybe let's what veal. I want the most expensive cut I want every night for supper. And of course, and I also, of course, want you to pay for it too. So the guy comes to me and asks me a shayla. It's like this. If your father's willing to give you this credit card and let him, you charge it to him, you have to go to Prime Grill and buy him supper. But if he asks you to pay for it, you're not required. We pass on halacha, keep it as Michelle Bang, Michelle Ab. The father has to pay for it. What does that mean? That the son is not required to give the $100 out of his pocket in order to feed the father what he wants. You're not required to. Says the Ma'arik, if you're not required to give your father $100, you're not required to give up a $100 bill for your father, you're required to give up the woman of your dreams for your father. It's more than $100. It sounds romantic. It is. It's a romantic notion of the Ma'arik, that the woman of your dreams is worth more than $100. However, others disagree. They say the $100 is in your pocket. You take it out of your pocket and give it to your father, you're not required to do. But what will happen, you can go somewhere and make $100. You don't have $100 yet. And your father says, give me supper. So according to many authorities, you're required to give your father supper and not make the profit of $100. So the son will say, acquiring the quote woman of your dreams to be your wife, that's considered to be a profit. You haven't married her yet. That's where the legalisms come in as far as where that is concerned. And the third reason of the Ma'arik is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to get married. And we just learned before, you're not supposed to listen to your father when he says not to do a mitzvah. Of course, the answer to that one is, yeah, if your father says don't get married at all, be celibate, of course you ignore him. He's not saying don't get married, just not this one. Anybody else but this one. I guess, I don't know how many times can he say that. But anybody else but this one. So you can find a woman who will make you happy and make your father happy. These things are all, it seems to me the real reason is the first reason, that the father has to, as we said, cancel his will for his son's will, and therefore the son, it's an unreasonable request. Son doesn't have to listen, and therefore that's where it stands. Now, it's interesting, the posts can go into this discussion of whether you are required to obey or not obey. And many say you're required to obey, but they say that it's maybe because of your disobedience is considered contradicting his words. And within the prohibition against contradicting his words, there's a dispute whether this prohibition exists only in the presence of your father or even not in his presence. So this may depend upon this. Can you contradict his words when you're not in his presence? The machlokas, the shach, and the taz, etc., etc. Now, but it's interesting. We learned last week, we had that beautiful Ramban, that part of kibud av aim is not limited to just getting him food and not contradicting him, sitting in the seat. It's honoring him, lifting him up, like you lift up God, the same as you are supposed to honor God in any which way, so supposed to honor your parents in any which way. And this is an interesting idea. If this is the main part of kibud av aim, which we saw from the Ramban, so if you do something which will make him proud, and you will not embarrass him, that itself is the highest level of kibud av aim, the highest level. And therefore, you'll be required to obey him in that kind of a circumstance. So for example, what will happen if your father's not there and he'll never find out? He'll never know if you obeyed him or not. So according to many authorities, you're not required to obey him. Because the whole purpose is you're going to make him feel better, but he'll never find out. So you're not required to obey. But if he will find out, even if he's not there right now, there would still be an obligation, if possible, to obey him. And the different examples of this are given. Different examples. One again is quoted from Rabbi Yashiv. Let's say the father asks the son to put on a tie. Because if you put on a tie, you're considered respectable in certain circles. Some circles, they never wear ties, but in these circles, they wear ties. And the son doesn't want to wear put on a tie. So Rabbi Yashiv says it depends. If the father will never find out if he's wearing a tie or not, you're not required. But if he'll find out through his spies, through his this, through his pictures, whatever, what, then you have to put on a tie. Can you imagine that? Son doesn't want to put on a tie, and the father says yes. So Rabbi Yashiv says it's not an unreasonable request. Because in certain, again, the society to which the son belongs, they do wear ties. Just he doesn't want to wear a tie. If he became some kind of certain chassid that always wears a tie, he'll go to his chassidish rabbi, he'll say, I don't have to wear a tie. But if he's still part of the society where wearing a tie is considered to be mechubad, honorable, he doesn't want to do it. He'd rather be non-mechubad. Then the father has to listen to the father. That's a psak of Rabbi Yashiv. Even if his father's not there, as long as his father will, in fact, find out about it, ultimately, and that's something which is very important to understand. I think Rabbi Yashiv's pshak, he's a god of Ador, something we should follow in whenever possible. This ends part one of today's shiur, which is really a continuation of last week. Now we're ready after your questions to start part two. Yes. Right. Let me tell you one thing. The father will find out. Believe me. Everyone in the shul, believe me that he'll find out. I know how these shuls work. He'll find out. In 2 minutes, he'll find out. Someone's already on the cell phone, already discussing it with him. That's it. That's the call right now. They're already telling the father that this guy's not listening. Okay. So today, I wanted to discuss this week's parsha. This week's parsha. This week's parsha, and this is now the English citation number two, which is the Rashi at the end of this week's parsha. Okay. Rabbi said in the name of Yitzchak bar Shmuel bar Marsa, the study of Torah is greater than honoring one's father and mother. Hear what's going on? Why? How do you know? Since for all the years Jacob spent in the academy of Aver, he was not punished, even though during that time he failed to honor his parents. Let's read 65. After Jacob received the blessing from his father Isaac, he was forced to flee to Haran. That's the end of this week's parsha. However, he did not go there directly, but first spent 14 years studying the Academy of Aver. And if you look at the last Rashi in this week's parsha, he explains the expression about the marriage of Esav to Machlas, why it said when he died, the whole genealogy, the whole calculation. When Jacob was separated from his son Joseph for 22 years as a punishment for not honoring his father, he was not punished for the 14 years spent studying Torah, Rashi. It's a Rashi here, and this comes from Masechta Megillah, 16b, and it's also in the Rashi, in a somewhat different form, the last Rashi in this week's parasha. This is an amazing, amazing din. At first glance, we see from here that studying Torah takes precedence over the mitzvah of Kibud Av Va'ei. So it would appear. I want to just, before we complete using this English section, let us turn to the left-hand column, where we will finish it. We only read the first half. A dissenting view. Isi ben Yehuda says, if it is possible for the mitzvah to be done by others, it should be done by others. And the son should go and perform the mitzvah of honoring his father. And that's how we follow the halacha. So what does that mean? Let's take a look in 38. Very, very important. Everyone have footnote 38? It's a very important footnote. However, if the other mitzvah cannot be performed by anyone else, one should attend to it oneself instead of obeying the command of one's father. From Rashi, it seems that this is true only in a case of mitzvos that cannot be performed later. In other words, you have to do the mitzvah now or never. So your father says, get me a cup of coffee. And if you get me the cup of coffee, then be unable to perform this other mitzvah, and later it's too late. How do we know? Parentheses. This is evidenced by the fact that Rashi gives the examples of burying and accompanying the dead. Mitzvos that apply only for only a limited time. You want to go to this levaya. You probably make a cup of coffee. So listen, they need you at the levaya. No one else can do what you have to do there, whatever it may be. So you go do the levaya. Yes, I'm sorry.
I was wondering before, we used the same Gemara to show that the father can tell you about getting married. But getting married is not a mitzvah, it's a mitzvah, but it's not a mitzvah that you have to do right then.
Oh, right. That's what we'll try to get there. A mitzvah that can be performed later, even if it cannot be performed by anyone else, should be postponed until one has served one's father. This is close from the base Yosef, Yeradeah 240 in Shulchan Aruch. Wow. So this is very important. Next paragraph is also very important. An apparent difficulty. There's a general rule that one engaged in the performance of a mitzvah is exempt from performing another mitzvah, regardless of whether or not the other mitzvah can be performed by others. Right? Because I'm in the middle of A, I shouldn't stop A and go to B. Why, in this case, if the other mitzvah cannot be performed by others, is one required to attend to it? In other words, why is it that you should, in effect, stop the mitzvah of Kibud Av V'Em and go do another mitzvah, such as going to a funeral? Why? The Rishonim answer that the law given here applies to one who has not yet begun to perform the mitzvah of honoring his parent, i.e. the two mitzvahs are before him, and he is faced with choosing which one to perform. But one who has already begun to perform a mitzvah, even if it could be done by others, is exempt from any other mitzvah that comes his way, even one that could not be done by others. So this is a bit of a complex legality, which leads us into our present discussion. And this is very, very interesting. Very, very interesting. Let's ask a question. Were Yaakov's parents opposed to his leaving them? Who was paying attention this morning in shul? Who sent them away?
Rivka.
Not only Rivka, but also who? Yitzchak. They both sent him away. It's clear as day. Yitzchak said, go, right? We just read it. Go far away and marry someone from the family. Leave.
He's
performing his father's mitzvah. Correct. So here's a big question. When the Talmud teaches us, and we just saw it over here in the right column, that one is not punished if he is not fulfilling the mitzvah of honoring a parent. Okay, it's true he didn't positively fulfill the mitzvah of honoring a parent, but at the same time, he wasn't disobeying his parent. His parents said, go. His parents said, leave. His parents said, get out of here and go far away. Rivka wanted him out. She was afraid Esav would kill him, and Yitzchak wanted him out to get married. But
he said to get married, and
right?
And he decided to go to yeshiva instead. He should have gone right to Lavan's house.
Okay, that's a good question. Correct. It is a good question. But his father did say he had a right to leave. Right. Now, what'll happen if his father says to him, "Don't go to study Torah. Don't go to study Torah." So some authorities say, if a father tells a son, don't go to study Torah, the son should not study Torah. Sounds against the can't be such a thing?
Impossible.
Okay. So the Sefer HaMakne was written by an eminent Torah authority. Yes, I'm sorry. Right, so that's where the tricky part is. Yitzchak just told him go, and he didn't give details. But he did, he sort of did not say to him, you are not to leave me to go study Torah. That he didn't say. He said, go get married. I'm sorry.
He said, go get married.
Okay. So, but you know, Yaakov wanted to make himself, a more appropriate shidduch,
He was a young man, he had plenty of time.
Yeah, he was only 63. He's only 63. He figured if he learns for 14 years till 77, he'll find a better shidduch.
He wouldn't have found Rachel if he came.
That's right. I don't know how young she was. How old was Rachel at that time? Some say she was very young. So if he would have gone 14 years before, he would not have landed such a good shidduch. So you see, it was all for the best. But in any event, he didn't dispute He didn't violate an explicit command of his father about. That's clear. So the Sefer HaMakne, written by Rav Pinchas Halevi Horowitz, the Rav of Frankfurt, from your community, he was your Rav, from Frankfurt am Main. He was the chief rabbi of Frankfurt am Main. Right? He's a Rebbe of the Chasam Sofa. We don't have to give his credentials. He was a great man. If you look at his Sefer, the Sefer HaMakne Kiddushin, on this Daf Lam and Aleph and Beis, if I read it correctly, that's exactly what he says. Not politically correct today. If your father says you are not to leave me to learn Torah, you're not to leave. And Yaakov went because Yitzchak told him to go. Right, you're right, he took a detour, but he didn't tell him you're not allowed to go. So he didn't contradict his words directly. Now,
he's telling him not to do a mitzvah. It's impossible to say something. Why he wants to go to mitzvah and learn Torah, right? Father, you don't have to listen.
That's what happened. Be patient. Patient. We're going to try to discuss a little bit more. Just less than time. Now. So the question then becomes whether an individual, we spoke a few weeks ago about the idea of leaving Eretz Yisrael, if you recall, in order to fulfill Kibbutz Av V'Ein. Maybe if the father and mother insist that you stay in America, you have to stay in America. According to the Sefer HaMakne, if the father and mother insist that you don't go to learn Torah, so you stay with them. So too, if they say, don't go to Eretz Yisrael, perhaps you also have to stay with them. Now, why am I saying this? Because Rabbi Avadi Yosef, in his very learned discussion, makes the following comment. Look, he says, when it comes to learning Torah, you are allowed to leave Eretz Yisrael, but you have to come back. So he says, Kibbutz Av V'Ein, listen carefully to his logic. What's stronger, Kibbutz Av V'Ein or Talmud Torah? He says, Talmud Torah is greater than Kibbutz Av V'Ein. He quotes what you saw. Right, look what it said. Godol Talmud Torah, Yosef Mikibbutz Av V'Ein. We just read it. So if he says, with respect to Talmud Torah, which is greater than Kibbutz Av V'Ein, the Gemara tells us you may leave Eretz Yisrael, but only if you come back. So to Kibbutz Av V'Ein, even if you can leave Eretz Yisrael, you have to come back. Now, of course, one can refute this on many grounds. Number one, come back when? You know when they came back? When Ezra came back to Eretz Yisrael? After the Rebbe died. But until his Rebbe Baruch Bener was alive, he stayed. So let's say somebody is a devotee of a particular Rebbe. So he can leave Eretz Yisrael as long as he comes back. Yeah. As long as the Rebbe is alive, he doesn't have to come back. So the same thing with Kibbutz Av V'Ein. As long as the father and mother are alive, he doesn't have to come back. So even if one accepts this analogy of Rebbe Avadja, it's still the bottom line is the opposite. The same as you can stay until your Rebbe passes away, you can stay until your parents pass away in Chutz Laretz. So I still go back to my original shiur. I'm still saying that there's room to say they have to pay up the debt, as I expressed it then, to a father and a mother. It's even more important than living in Eretz Yisrael. I know it's not everyone agrees with me, but I still maintain that way, even though it's against Rabbi Avadja. But moreover, we can say that the entire Gemara that he's quoting here, again, Godol Talmud Torah Mikibbutz Av V'Ein, is only limited to a case where the father and mother didn't give an explicit command, don't do it. Quoted HaMakne, if the father and mother say, don't do it, don't leave me to learn Torah, then you have to stay with them. So too, if they say, don't leave me to go to Eretz Yisrael, you have to stay with them as well. So you have two separate possibilities of refuting what Rabbi Avadi Yosef said. That's again review. Rabbi Avadi Yosef Paskin, that living in Eretz Yisrael is more important than Kibbutz Av V'Ein. And even those who would disagree would say that you have to go and come right back. Say the same with respect to Talmud Torah, you have to go and come right back. So I have two, and if we saw before, Talmud Torah is greater than Kibbutz Av V'Ein. I have two refutations. Number one, come right back with respect to Talmud Torah is when the Rebbe dies. The story of Ezra and Baruch Ben Neriah. So same thing with the parents, as long as the parents are alive. Number two, it's very possible this entire Talmudic discussion is referring to a case where the parents did not say explicitly that you may not leave us. So then, Talmud Torah is greater, Yaakov wasn't punished. But if they say explicitly not to leave, then perhaps you can't leave not for Talmud Torah, you can't leave not for Talmud Torah, not to go to Eretz Yisrael. So Kibud Av V'Em is more powerful than you think. More powerful than you think. And something very interesting, very, very interesting. One of the earliest sources, called the Trumas Hadeshen, quotes the following remarkable thing. What will happen if someone wants to leave Eretz Yisrael to learn Torah in a yeshiva in America? He says, Father, you're out of your mind. There are more yeshivas in Israel than there are in America. He says, yeah, you're right. But my Rebbe, the Rebbe I want to learn from, he is in America. So the Gemara says in Masechet Erevin, you may leave Eretz Yisrael if the Rebbe that you want to learn from is in America. Even though there are 100 Rebbeim in Eretz Yisrael. That's what he says. How does he know it's true? He says, look, this is all part of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Now, leaving for Talmud Torah is better than what we call Kibud Av Va'em. Leaving for Talmud Torah, I repeat, is more important than Kibud Av Va'em. And he quotes this Gemara that Yaakov Avinu was not punished. Okay, fine. The question, of course, becomes this source of Trumas Hadeshen cites that Gemara we spoke about the very first week, that when the question was raised whether you may leave Eretz Yisrael to honor your father and mother, Rabbi Yochanan said the famous words, "I don't know." I don't know. So wait a minute. What does that mean? He says to leave Eretz Yisrael for father and mother. I don't know. To leave Eretz Yisrael for Talmud Torah. Right. So we do know. We do know. Okay. So what is that? What comes out is to go for Talmud Torah is more important than Kibud Av V'Em. But to leave Eretz Yisrael may not be more important than Kibud Av V'Em. All right? So you have this little complex proof that Talmud Torah is the most important thing. Of course, the question becomes, why did he need that for? He just should have quoted this Gemara. Gadol Talmud Torah, Yosef Mikibud Av V'Em. Explicit. Why must he go around them and go like this? So the answer may be what I just told you before. In the Gemara's case, Yitzchak Avinu did not say, don't leave me. And what the Trumas Hadeshen is discussing is when the father says, don't leave. So if the father says, don't leave, you cannot prove from this Talmudic passage that's in front of you that you in fact may leave the father and mother and go to study Torah. Can't prove it. He had permission to leave. And the Trumas Hadeshen is, you're allowed to leave your father, you know, he protests vigorously. Don't leave. So the Hamakna says you have to obey your parent and don't leave. And the Trumas Hadeshen says, as you said, that you may leave. But you can't bring an absolute proof from this Talmudic passage, because in this Talmudic passage, Yitzchak Avinu never said to Yaakov, don't leave. Never told him not to leave. Never. He said, a complicated proof. What does that mean? Because he's discussing the Kibud Av V'Em against the father's permission. That was, he left his mother against her will, if you recall that whole story we spoke about. See, the Talmud Torah is even greater, even in a case in which the parent protests. That's perhaps what he is suggesting. Based on what we said earlier, we could possibly reject this proof. I want to say one thing which I think is very, very important. Yaakov Avinu is comparable to the Gemara. Let's take a look here. These two Gemaras are let's take one last look at this, what's in front of you in the English. The two Gemaras are really comparable. Let's review. On the left hand, what does it say? On the left hand, it says that a person may leave his father and mother and do the other mitzvah. On the right hand, it says that Talmud Torah is greater than Kibud Av V'Em. So perhaps, as you said before, because it's a mitzvah. And then we have to suggest what you had also said before, that although Yitzchak Avinu told Yaakov to leave, he only told him to leave to get married. But he never told him to leave and spend 14 years in a yeshiva. That was, he pulled a fast one on his father. That was before, you know, the cell phone, they would tell everybody where he was, you know. Yes?
You know, I see another difference. In the Gemara where we're talking about Yitzchak, Yitzchak gave permission to Yaakov. So it wasn't a question that he didn't listen to his parents. But the Gemara says there's an issue of all the time that he was missing away from his parents, he wasn't doing the mitzvah of kibud av v'aim that he would have done normally every day.
Right.
Now, except the time that he learned Torah, even though he's still away from his parents and he's still missing doing that mitzvah of kibud av v'aim every day, but Torah is greater, so Torah, you know, excuses him from the fact that he didn't do the mitzvah every day. But everything else that he did, you know, going to get married and working and whatever, and he was away from his parents, even with their permission, but he still, by his absence, did not do the positive command of Kaveh Sevicha,
right.
So he was punished for that time. Not that he did something wrong, or that what we could prove from that, whether if your parents tell you not to do something, and you want to learn Torah, and your parents tell you not, you can't learn anything from that. All the Gemara is telling you is that during the time of your absence, if you learn Torah, you're safe, because Torah is greater. If you don't learn Torah, you're doing something wrong, you're not being with your parents.
That's a very good point. An excellent point. The point is being raised, why was Yaakov Avinu punished in the first place for those 22 years he was away? Well, that's not fair. He did what his father and mother told him to do. So he's answering, true, he did what he told him to do, but bottom line, didn't bring him coffee. And it didn't bring him coffee, so a person on that level will be punished. So Yosef didn't bring him coffee. It was worse. You know, he was MIA. But you're saying Torah is a protective device. We cannot derive this sort of semi-agadic statement, anything, when it comes to tachlis,
right.
May I, you're saying is not wrong, but I just call you a smattering of what some of the wise men of the ages try to derive from this Gemara. You are correct. I think your point is very well taken. These derivations are not absolute, because you can play with them. As we already told you, tupshatim. Was he there? It wasn't against his father's direct wish. On the other hand, his father maybe didn't know he was there. So you can already see it two ways. And you're saying even a third way. Yes, Colin.
But that logic, you'd have to live with your parents. Well, you wouldn't be able to just move away because you would not be performing keep it up. And according to your logic, it comes out that you'd be punished for not doing keep it up. Even if, you know, just passively.
I mentioned in one of the previous shiurim that one of the members of our shul, when I heard the shiur I gave on this related topic, oh, you mean that my son lives in California, has to move back and live here near me in Riverdale? Right, he wasn't. He's 3,000 miles away. So I told him that you just let things be. Just leave things where they are. Don't rock this boat. And perhaps the answer was as follows: that the only time you would say, and this is gonna, I'll sort of end with this. Perhaps next week will be our last shiur on this topic. We'll move to. So I'll discuss a few other types of relationships. I mean, next we'll just finish this up a little bit. But perhaps the overarching and unified principle in this entire discussion is what I said to you last week and this week. Is it reasonable or not reasonable? In other words, if the son can reasonably live near his father and do whatever else he has to do in life, then maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. In certain communities, that's how it is. They live near the father, you know, if it's at all possible. But let's say, for argument's sake, it's not a reasonable expectation. The son has occupational responsibilities, other familial needs, whatever needs he has, social needs, which are reasonable needs that he has to live in place A when his father is in place B. So since if the father would have asked him, move near me or stay near me, and the son would have asked his rav what to do, the rabbi would have said, you're not required to, because it's not a reasonable request. How can we then turn around and say, you're going to be punished? He asked the rabbi. He asked the shy by the rabbi. The rabbi knows that he can't get his father coffee if he's 1,000 miles away. But the rabbi knows that in his occupation, whatever it is, he has to be on the East Coast, and his father's on the West Coast, or somewhere in Chicago. So he can't progress in his whatever he's doing in life, unless he's here, or if he's in Israel, not in Israel, whatever the case may be. So I want to say that this whole thing is all a matter of what's reasonable. And the chiddush of the Gemara in Masechta Megillah, the right-hand column over here, is that it's reasonable for a son to say, I want to leave my father and study Torah unfettered and unhindered and uninterrupted, which may be considered by some parents to be unreasonable. I'm a shuguna sitting in 14 years and learning and not being near me when he can help me out. It's unreasonable for the son to demand that. And here the Torah is giving us a value system. That's incorrect. That it's not unreasonable for the son to want to be in a place all by himself, in isolation, in a yeshiva, in a proper atmosphere. And therefore, when the father says to the son, sonny boy, I demand that you stay here and don't go there. So the Hamatna says that the father's request is reasonable. And therefore, the son must obey. Because if he doesn't obey, in the Hamatna's words, he's being disrespectful. He is contradicting his father's words. That's the Hamatna says. But that, as you, I think, correctly pointed out, is a minority view. It's a minority view. And the Hamatna, again, just to repeat, is assuming that Yitzhak never told Yaakov, you're not allowed to go to learn Torah. If he would have told him, he would have to follow Yitzhak and not go learn. That's, I consider it to be a minority view, but it is a view. We can't disregard it. I think the majority view, the consensus view, is the other way around. The simple read of the Gemara, that Yaakov Avinu was not punished for the 14 years he was in yeshiva. I'm constructing the following scenario. Let's say they would have a dispute. Yitzchak would say, no, and you have to come back. And Yaakov would say, no, I want to stay here. Who would Yaakov go to? The Rosh Yeshiva, not his father. Go to Eber, right? Shem and Eber. Eber would say to Yaakov, Yankala, if your father wants you to come back and you want to stay here by me in yeshiva, I, Paskin, in my capacity as Rosh Yeshiva, you're allowed to stay here. And he had the right to follow the Rosh Yeshiva. So how can you punish him? So I like to go back to put everything in one big ribbon. Everything we're saying about Kibbutz, when it runs up against Yishuv Eretz Yisrael, it runs up against Talmud Torah, right? All these run against other mitzvahs. It's all a question of what's considered to be reasonable on the part of the father. So the father cannot expect the son to take care of him and forego a mitzvah which cannot be done later on. If the mitzvah can be done later on, then it's reasonable the father to say, get me the coffee now, and do the mitzvah 5 minutes later. But if the son wants to be far away at Shem Ve'ever's yeshiva, the father can say to the son, okay, you can go to Shem Ve'ever's yeshiva, but I want you to serve me supper every night. So it's a 12 hour trip, so it'll be every just maybe on the enrolled in the yeshiva, but never be there. It'll always be on the travel back here, back there. That's an unreasonable request. And apparently, it's reasonable for a Talmud Chacham to want to be in isolation. Because you know, when you're in the house, there's so many distractions. That seems to be the upshot of everything we've learned. Yes? It seems to me that the father and mother want the son to be with them. In some cases, is an unreasonable request. But some cases, it is a reasonable request. That they need him, things of this nature. So if they need him, then it's reasonable for them to expect that the son, to go back to a term we mentioned in the previous weeks, pay back his obligation to father and mother. The same way the person has the right to go on Aliyah, if he owes many dollars to somebody because he started a business, you can't just sell your house and sell your business and go to Israel because the rabbi said, and we spoke about that, until you pay up your debt. So you have to pay up your debt to your parents. So the parents have a right to ask the son, we need you here. But let's say this parents say, you know, we want to live here. Why? Why? Because you want to be, the parents are young and able-bodied, and they just want to have the kids running around them. Mostly the grandchildren, probably running around them. I think it's an unreasonable request, especially today. Today, there's even webcam. In certain circles, that's taboo. But I know it exists, webcam. And I remember this summer in camp, one of the couples from Israel was right near me. We had someone had a satellite dish right up. Obviously, they came to my side of the camp, and they're on the grass. They're on a Friday early in the morning, and they're waving to the parents. They're wishing them a good Shabbos in Eretz Yisrael. I saw it right in front of my eyes. So, sometimes in that kind of situation, they'll have more FaceTime with each other when they're 6,000 miles away, they have to be 60 miles away. So, you know, these things have to... What I'm saying now in summation, and we'll, you know, we're going to go back a little bit next week to this, but this is my summary comment on this whole story, is that, yes, children are required to respect their parents, revere their parents, even obey their parents. That's, again, the majority view, I believe, as we discussed last week. But all three, respect, revere, obey, is only when it's reasonable. When the parents make a request, which is unreasonable, they're not required to respect. They can just, they're not required to buy them, you know, to go every day, to run, whatever, to give them supper every single day. It's not reasonable. Not required even to revere, which means they may quote-unquote disobey, because the request is an unreasonable request. And they're not required, as we said before, parents make a request which is not a reasonable request, so the child is just putting too much on it. As the Chazanish put it, the father is required to be mevatel his rotzen in front of the rotzen of his son. That's why after listening comes to shidduchim in most cases. Because in most cases of shidduchim, the father and mother are making an unreasonable request. In my view, if it's a reasonable request, then the child really should be listening to his parents. And I may not, I'll probably not make anybody happy in this room. The parents are up in arms. What do you mean? Doesn't listen to me. And the children are saying, ask, listen to my parents in some case. So, as usual, Mike, I somehow fit in between. I don't make anybody happy. But I'm just explaining to you what I think emerges from this halachic analysis. So, Bli Neder, next week we're going to finish up the topic of Kibbutz Av Ve'Em and move on to different relationships within the halacha. Thank you for coming, and Shavuot Tov.